Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are, in fact, tonight's entertainment. We're having a bit of audio issues right now, so hang on with us while we figure it out. I have Mr. John Gooden on the phone with me here, but apparently I cannot hear him. John, are you there? Let's just do a quick test. Test 1, 2. John, are you there? Okay. I've got you patched in on the board. I've got you through. And I cannot hear you. Okay, maybe we'll have to get John to try to call in again. John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Mr. Gooden.
I don't know if you guys can hear me.
Ah, wonderful. There you are. I can hear you. Okay.
John,
do you mind if we just restart the show?
No, you guys go ahead.
Okay. We'll go in 3, 2, 1. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are, in fact, tonight's entertainment. Welcome to another edition of AMP Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Another MMA Cast. As always, we are presented by the AMP Radio Network, and this particular show we like to call Proteus's Primetime. I am your host, Proteus, and today I am pleased to be joined by one half of the UFC's EMEA region commentary team. And if you don't know what that means, it's Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and according to this gentleman's website, sometimes Asia. I am joined by Mr. John Gooden. Follow him on Twitter at John Gooden UK, and that's JohnGoodenUK. I have John here today to discuss the upcoming hashtag UFC Rotterdam card on September 2nd. John, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great, guys. How are you? Thank you for that introduction as well.
Thank you for being here. We are pleased to have you. John, I see that you've already had a busy day. It's very early in the morning here for me, but I see that you've had a very busy day already. So I guess you were out talking some kind of fight that's happening today?
Yeah, apparently there's some stuff going on over in Vegas this weekend, and some journalists wanted to hear from me. So, yeah, I popped down to the Sky Sports Studio, Sky News Studio. Sky are the ones who are providing the pay-per-view broadcast over here in the UK. So, yeah, I spoke with a journalist, a newscaster, and we spoke about Mayweather-McGregor a little bit.
Yes, and of course, pull back the curtain for anybody listening. We are recording on the day of Mayweather-McGregor. We went through this fight last night on our Smack My Picks Up edition, but let's get a quick, if you don't mind, let's get a quick pick from you. Who do you think wins tonight?
I'm Team McGregor, man. I have to be. I want to be. I believe he can do it. I think he brings something so unique to the table, and I guess as MMA folk, we are a little bit conditioned at the moment, almost defensive, like when the boxing fraternity come to us and say it can't possibly happen. So, you know, I've gone through my mind, read a lot of stuff, you know, examined what I'd seen and heard in the past. And yeah, I'm on board. I think McGregor can do this. I hope he does it. If he does do it, I think it's in the first half of the fight. But whatever happens, I mean, sport is the winner tonight. I can't wait for it. I really can't.
Yeah, I also have McGregor. I have McGregor in three rounds. I just think that, and I know this is an unpopular opinion, but I just think the rematch is going to be worth so much more money that McGregor just has to do it. So, listen, John, on this show, John, when we have someone on for the first time, we like to get to know them a little bit more. So before we get into UFC Rotterdam, let's get to know you a little bit better. Is that okay with you?
Oh, great. I mean, I like talking about myself, right? I'm a sports commentator.
Wonderful. Okay. So, John, as I was researching you, I realized that you are a very accomplished individual. You have many, many likes and things that you like to do, and a lot of very tough things, in my opinion. So, as I was researching you, I noticed that you are a licensed electrician and inspector. Now, John, was this a family trade that you decided to get into, or was it something that just interested you?
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm not sure about accomplished, but I certainly give things a go. And one of those things that I ended up giving a try was kind of being an electrician and more on the testing and inspection side of things. It was my father's business. I was working in the city of London before in banking, recruitment for banks, things of that nature. Then I actually tried to get a TV career going in my early 20s, but I wanted to be a presenter at the time, not someone behind the camera, and it wasn't really happening. So yeah, I ended up falling into the family business and was all in, you know, 7 days a week for many, many years, over 10 years. And it was whilst I was working with my dad and in his family business that I was also training in mixed martial arts, and then started on the commentary and doing a bit of writing in UK mixed martial arts as well.
Okay, so that brings me perfectly to my next question. One of the questions that we kind of obviously ask everyone is, how did you get to MMA? What brought you to the sport that we love? And secondly, were there any fights or fighters that really stuck out in your mind in the early days as you were coming up?
Yeah, well, I've always been a ferociously competitive individual, and I was practicing judo at the age of 7 or 8, you know, competing nationally. And then I switched to karate. My uncle, who still practices, actually, he's kind of in his 50s, and I think he's like a third or fourth dan in Shotokan karate. So I was with him. I did karate for a number of years. Then I left that because none of my friends were really into martial arts. Everyone played football, soccer. We didn't at school, so I missed out a fair chunk. And in the end, ended up playing a pretty decent level of football. But it's a lot of politics. The whole team thing sometimes became a bit too much. And I ended up going back to like combat sports. And actually, it was boxing. So I competed in the ABAs in the UK. I didn't, not a, for a very long time, as whilst I was at university and just after. I left that, and then a few years again, I went back to football. That I got bored with again, and then I turned to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, and eventually I found a mixed martial arts club kind of nearby, and that's where it's been. So it's come from participation, always been involved in combat sports. I think it's important to know how to defend oneself. I maybe got a bit of stick when I was younger and felt like I had to, you know, train to learn to defend myself. And it went from there to martial arts and sports. And I just like the challenge. You know, I came to MMA far too late to be able to make a decent go of it myself. And that's even being kind, because I don't think I'm naturally the most gifted martial artist. I've got a big heart, but that's about it. I became a member of a team. I was all in. I was gripped by not only the training of mixed martial arts, not only my colleagues in the gym and how much they were invested in this sport. And I say invested, like time invested, because no one was earning any money. And also started watching some of the early days, you know, when you've got Couture versus Liddell, Rampage Jackson, Georges St. Pierre, Anderson Silva, all of those guys, as far as, you know, talking of Dan Hardy and Michael Bisping. So the usual suspects. I'm not going to pretend I was in at UFC 1 because I wasn't, but I did get hold of some of that stuff and, you know, just in awe of these incredible fighters. So it went from there, really. And I as much as I was competing, I was part of a team. The team did a show. And to cut a long story short, they thought that I was better off maybe trying to lend some words on a microphone than warming up people and cornering them. So that's where it began. And it just developed from there very quickly.
So, John, I know of your Cage Warriors days, but as I was researching, I saw that you've done a lot of presenting for other promotions. So kind of give us a timeline of, was it your days at the BBC that kind of started you off on this course? And then what brought you, obviously, to the UFC eventually. So give us a little bit of a timeline of how that worked out, because I couldn't really put the pieces together myself while I was researching.
Yeah, well, it's a difficult one to do that. I think that I would have to almost cast aside the BBC experience. That was when I was maybe 24, and I was there for about 18 months. And then I was with my dad and kind of still help him out a little bit to the day. But I mean, that was such a long time ago. I'd like to think that I was 34, but I'm older than that still. So, yeah, I'd shelved any ambitions of becoming a presenter when I was working for my dad. It just wasn't on my radar, and I was actually quite interested in being a good businessman and learning about business and creating this new brand and style of electrical contracting. I almost wanted to sort of change the face of the game. But MMA was just far more interesting than sockets and light switches. And it really was just helping out the team and helping out the sport, helping out my coaches, just to get their story out there. And I started to remember that I felt like I was confident enough and had, how can I say this without kind of bigging myself up? But I just felt like I could convey information a little bit better than what was out there. And no disrespect to a lot of the people or some of the people that were presenting and commentating on MMA shows back in those days, but they just weren't that polished. And I didn't really agree with the way in which they were promoting the sport. It was all pretty hardline sensationalist stuff. And I just knew that our sport, in order for it to be taken seriously, you needed to become a little bit more BBC, if that means anything to a US audience, right? But kind of a little bit more guy in a suit and tie rather than guy in a tap out t-shirt, all of which has its place. But if we really wanted to make this work, then that's what we needed to do. So yeah, once I started doing a bit of commentary, I actually blew my back out pretty bad. I spent 5 years on the sidelines where I couldn't train. But I look back on it now as almost a blessing, because I was able to turn my attentions away from my own journey in martial arts and competition to then doing a bit of writing and attending shows and doing the work that I was doing at Cage Warriors.
Right, John. So I'm going to fanboy out a little bit here just for a minute, if I can. Back in the day, when we first started the show, we had John Anik on, and one of the first topics that I brought up was you and Dan, because I think that you guys do such a fantastic job on the broadcast. You work together very seamlessly. And of course, you mentioned Dan as one of the fighters that you were watching before you got into this. And now you work side by side with him. So what's that like? You know, what's life like working for the UFC and, of course, you know, working with one of those fighters that you look up to when you were coming up?
Well, firstly, thank you for those kind words. Yeah, we really appreciate the support and the fact that our peers, you know, guys like yourself who are involved in, you know, promoting our sport, like the work that we do. For me, it means a great deal. And it's crazy, isn't it? And I think we have to look at Dan in this, really, because I'm just some guy. And you know, as much as Dan is a Brit, he was living out in America, probably didn't, you know, he had his own career. He probably wasn't watching a lot of the stuff that I was putting out. So maybe he knew me, maybe he didn't. I actually don't really know. But one thing that was obvious was I knew him. I'd gone to Nottingham to watch that I think the last fight that he had, certainly in the UK, before his injury issues came about with his health issues. So I'm just grateful that he gave me a chance, you know, that he kind of stepped back and thought, okay, well, this guy's clearly put in the work. Let's see what he has to say, because I don't look like a fighter. I don't pretend to know everything about it, but, you know, I've spent a lot of time on the mats. I've been in a ring. I've been in a cage. I've competed. I'm not saying that I've competed at anywhere near the level of these guys, but I do know some stuff. And I think that therefore I can bring something a little different to the broadcast, just because I felt it a little bit. And when you felt it a little bit, you want to know what it's like when that's magnified in the UFC. And that's what I always wanted in my broadcast partner. I was doing a lot of work with a guy called Josh Palmer at Cage Warriors, who we worked together. I really enjoyed working with Josh, and I felt like we helped develop that Cage Warriors brand together. We were both so passionate about what we were doing. And Josh was a very articulate guy, super bright, and he had a real thing for the grappling arts. And me with my background striking, so it kind of worked. But he'd never fought in a world title. He'd never been inside an octagon. And in actual fact, I'd probably fought more in terms of, you know, boxing or MMA. So I needed to, I really wanted to challenge someone in that position to let the viewers know what it's like. And also fellow fighters, you know, people that were on the up, because I felt like that was probably where I was at. I was like an amateur fighter who wanted to know what it would take to get to the top. But at the same time, I'm also the guy that people come to and kind of try and say bad things about our sport because it's not so well recognized over here in Europe. So I was very used to using certain vocabulary and having certain conversations that were educational. And I think it's just getting that blend. And Dan understood that very, very early on. He's taken to this like a duck to water. Yes, he's used to the limelight, but that guy was not used to being in a broadcast position as a commentator and trying to deliver a bunch of different things. And, you know, at least I'd had some reps on Cage Warriors and other shows. He hadn't. And I take my hat off to him. He's done so very well with the gig.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's continue that talk a little bit, because you guys also do something, some breakdowns. The show is called Inside the Octagon, and I believe you're still doing that, correct, for Unibet?
Oh, well, it's not for Unibet. So we haven't done it for Unibet for the last couple of years. So it's actually a UFC show now. It's still very much ongoing.
Okay, yeah. And those breakdowns are fantastic. Dan, as you mentioned, it just seems to be super solid. And yeah, that transition that he made from fighter to his role now is amazing. I guess he's just such a hard worker. And I suppose the same can be said about you. I mean, what is fight prep like? Because, I mean, this coming up weekend, next weekend, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, you've got a number of fights and fighters to learn about and to be able to speak about on the broadcast. So what kind of is that preparation like? Have you started prepping already? I would imagine you would.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I started 2 or 3 weeks ago. We did a UFC breakdown show as well, which is more of a magazine format where we often get a guest in. We had Darren Till in for this one and Nick Peets, who's a journalist and podcaster. So, yeah, Dan and I do a lot of work together around it. So my preparation can start quite far out depending on what my schedule is like. And I will start... My preparation is almost two parts. So I've got my work where I have to represent these athletes, and I want to know their story, their background, what they're doing now, what they've done, so that I can bring that in, particularly on the walkouts, you know, fill those walkouts with a sense of who this person is, not just this athlete. I want to talk more about, you know, whether they've just had a child and how that's impacted their preparations rather than their last fights, because we can talk about that. Dan can certainly talk about that during the throes of action. So I spend a lot of time going over social media and if I can, reaching out to some of these athletes directly and building those stories. And then the other part of this is the preparation for the broadcast, which is like nothing else that I have ever seen or been used to in sports. And in actual fact, I've been told by other producers and directors over in the UK that, you know, you, as in Dan and I, will never work on a more complicated sports broadcast because we don't know how long the fight's going to go. There's a bunch of promotional material that we need to get into the broadcast. We may or may not use it, but we still got to be prepared for it. So that takes a while. It takes a long time to build that. I have a system which I input all of that information and start to think about the ways in which I want to meander through the program, make sure it's okay with the producers. And that process literally carries on till, I mean, I've been sending things through for printing half an hour before we start the broadcast. So I really don't [S2] Wow. [S1] Stop. I will continue to try and add to my knowledge base on the coach up there. If I can sit next to a coach who I hadn't managed to get before, I might find out something revolutionary on our way to the arena before these guys go to war. So I'm always open, keeping an open ear and eye to see if I can, you know, grab someone and see what's been going on. And then I'll input that into the show notes and get it out there. I think another thing that I'm trying to also prepare now is more about my voice, breathing techniques, delivery, and a few other sort of physical preparations where I can make things better, just deliver a more polished broadcast, because I feel like the other stuff, now I've got that down, but I perhaps didn't look at the art of broadcasting quite as closely as I do now. So I'm always trying to improve, be the best that I can be for these athletes, their teams, the UFC, and also, you know, to help entertain.
Yeah, it's hard for people who don't you know, do any kind of broadcasting at all, and I'm very new to this game as well, but it's a very, very difficult thing to do. And I don't do what you do, but you always have to be learning, right? You always have to be trying to get better. And that seems like you and Dan have got that down pat. Now I want to talk about something more in your personal life, if I might, because I'm looking through your website. And of course that is johngooden.co.uk for anybody who's interested in checking that out. There are a lot of great pictures posted there. Some fresh-faced pictures of Mr. Gooden without his glorious beard. As a beard sporter myself, very, very nice beard, my friend. So let's talk about the triathlons and the obstacle races.
Yeah.
What brought that about? What inspired you to torture yourself, for lack of a better word, in these particular... Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think it kind of just is a character trait. Now, when I joined the UFC, that took any MMA competition off of the table. I mean, they're not going to let me go out there and fight. And actually, even grappling these days, submission wrestling tournaments, I see a lot of my colleagues, my teammates going, and they're quite active on the scene. But I think now that I'm in this position, it's not as easy for me to just jump into a competition as it would have been before I was with the UFC. So I feel like there's a bit more pressure on me. So anyway, I wanted to go and challenge myself physically because I feel like I need that. I didn't want to go back to football just because I just didn't. I'd been there and done it and been quite disappointed with that whole game quite a few times. So I thought, what can I do which is new, which is going to challenge me? And these obstacle races and triathlons just came about. I have a couple of friends that do them, and with this kind of work as a broadcaster in sports, I'm always working weekends, so I don't really see any of my friends anymore. So it was a good opportunity to connect back with one friend in particular, Jamie, who's an incredible athlete. And I started doing a couple of sprint triathlons, and then before I knew it, Jamie had signed me up to an Ironman. I was like, oh, you know, holy shit, this is for real now. So there it began. I pretty much had 6 months to prepare for an Ironman, and it was an eye-opening experience in terms of sports science, training load, and also what you can achieve if you put your mind to it. It kind of it helped me with my competitive itches, showed me what I could do with my broken body. And yeah, and I will be continuing in the near future as well.
I found it very interesting as you went through the process, you videotaped or you recorded a lot of the processes that you were going through. And I found it very, very interesting to follow along and to watch those videos of how much work you actually were putting into it and how difficult it was for you to become that kind of an athlete. Very, very interesting for me. And then those videos are still posted online. You guys can go back and watch them. But I wanted to transfer over to something that you do on YouTube. You've got your own little show going on there called The Bloody Vegan. Now, I think that's a fantastic name, first of all. But what brought about The Bloody Vegan, and what is your kind of end game with that particular YouTube channel?
Yeah, thanks. Well, my wife came up with that name, so I thank her for it. And I think that... At first, I was looking at putting out or documenting that journey as a vegan to then completing an Ironman. And I think people often believe that they would go hand in hand, vegans and endurance athletes. So now I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm going to continue that, but show my jiu-jitsu, my journey through jiu-jitsu maybe, or whatever else. But also, if I'm honest, I have been working on a show. We're trying to get a show out there with the UFC, a more magazine-style show, a proper formatted broadcast show for a network over here. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen. I've been talking about it with some people since January. So I think now that Bloody Vegan channel might become my new vehicle for kind of all things that I do. So I might be going on the road with a camera now to MMA gyms and talking to UFC fighters. But at the same time, I think I want to be more of a voice in the vegan community. I believe like my life has benefited from going plant-based in terms of health. I've connected with some really interesting individuals. I lead a more compassionate lifestyle in terms of, you know, what I wash with, the chemicals we use in our home, the clothes that I buy or don't buy, and those sorts of things. And I think that there's a lot of people that challenge masculinity and all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, working in the fight business, you've got some real kind of alpha male types. And I just think I'm happy to show that I can still go and, you know, fight on a mat. I can still run triathlons. I don't have to eat meat. I can be a compassionate person. I can still work in this crazy sport as well. And I guess I'm doing it at a pretty decent level, you know? So it really is just to try and talk about that and introduce some new concepts along the way. So yeah, there are plans. It's difficult. I haven't always known what direction to go with things and whether I should be putting more emphasis on one over the other, but I think I'm just literally thinking about it too much. I just need to start putting some content out.
Yeah, it's true, because if you look at somebody like Scribius Pip, I don't know if you're familiar, well, you probably are, being UK based and,
of course,
and
yes,
knowing Dan Hardy, you probably know who Scribius Pip is. Yes. So I mean, Pip just goes around, he's got his equipment with him all the time. You don't need a network anymore. You don't need somebody to support you. You can just do it yourself. And I look forward to any kind of content that you put out. But let's talk about the veganism for a minute, because I'm not a vegan, but I do eat clean. I do eat plant-based. I'm more of a pescatarian. I just eat mainly just eggs. We don't pretty much eat fish anymore. And hardly eat any dairy, but you know, clean eating and clean living is very important to myself as well. I own a business, and the products that we use are all very eco-friendly as much as possible. So I've always kind of had that kind of connection with you as well, because I tend to want to eat clean as well. And it is very important for people to realize that you don't need to eat meat every single day of the week. You know what I mean? You can eat a little bit healthier. You will feel better. Your body will thank you. Correct?
Yeah, I think the overriding thing for me was my body was just less stressed. I'd had salmonella three times as an adult, so I've been pretty unlucky. But I don't really get that unwell as a vegan. There are I suffer sinus problems, and I'm seeing a link at the moment between gluten and my sinuses. So I'm now starting to take gluten out, and it's showing good effects actually. So apart from a few sort of sinusitis bouts and things of that nature, you know, I never have or rarely have bad stomach issues, and that used to be a weekly occurrence for me. So yeah, eating clean, and I don't really go out there and bang the drum and be all smug about it. But at the same time, a byproduct of those plant-based choices is just your footprint is lighter. You know, no one has to suffer really for this, or no animals are suffering. You start getting into different layers about, you know, the companies that you would buy from because of their working practices, etc. Like, I won't wear Nike anymore. I got rid of all of that. However, I still do own a bunch of Apple stuff, and I know that they're not exactly the nicest people to work for, but I'm trying my best, you know. I can hopefully do some good with my Apple products eventually to maybe spread a good word that might help people challenge some of their practices, some of their buying patterns and things of that nature.
Okay, well, John, let's transition into the UFC card coming up next, actually a week from today, as we only have you for another 30 minutes. I guess we best get into the card.
Yeah, let's do it.
As I mentioned at the top, you will be in Rotterdam, the Netherlands, at the, I believe it's the Rotterdam Ahoy Stadium.
Correct.
For UFC Fight Night. Volkov versus Struve. Now, I was listening to the CME, the co-main event podcast, on Monday, and they were kind of comedically poo-pooing this card as saying that there wasn't very much to it. And when I was researching the card, I mean, not only do we have some great fights on the main card, but on the prelims, we have some fights that could be just barn burners. So what we're going to do, John, if we can, is go through the main event. Of course, we've lost a fight due to injury. Jermaine Durandamy has fallen out of the card in the co-main event, which is unfortunate. I was looking forward to that story continuing, and I guess it kind of still is, John. Unfortunately, it's been a very, very bad day for Jermaine. So let's start there, and we'll go through the fights on the main card. And then on this show, we like to do something like that we like to call Spotlight Fight of the Night. Now, the Spotlight Fight of the Night is one fight that is not on the main card that you think will be a standout fight of the night. So keep that in your brain for later. And before I get you out of here, I'll get your Spotlight Fight of the Night. So let's start with the whole Durandamy issue, if we can, in the co-main event. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, a very, very bad day, year for Durandamy. I mean, she was the women's 145 champ and then have decided to give up that belt to fight at 135. And then, of course, now we've heard that she's fallen out of this fight. What kind of information do you have, if any, about Durandamy falling out?
Well, first of all, and I'm just being facetious here, so I apologize, but she was stripped of the belt. She didn't have a choice. It was correct. It was taken from her, and I don't think she was given. She wasn't really. Yeah, that just happened. So it's been a crazy time for her, and I'm actually quite sympathetic. Because I've been out to Durandamy's camp. One of the things that I do alongside my commentary work, I do a lot of producing for the UFC. So anytime they have a main event fighter in Europe, they normally call on me to go, as long as they're training in Europe, I'll go out, put a camera on them, ask them the questions. So I've been out with Jermaine, and she is a sweetheart. She is a true pro. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. I really enjoyed our time with her. She couldn't have been more hospitable over there. So seeing all of this unfold is just so unfortunate. The whole thing during the fight with Holly and not, you know, the punches after the bell, to then saying no to a fight with Cyborg. And I kind of, the way that I look at these things is people feel a certain way. And people have certain feelings. So sometimes you just have to respect that. She is a police officer. So she obviously has certain values in order to be a police officer. That's not everyone will believe that police officers have the best values, but I think her heart's in the right place is what I'm trying to get at. So she had something within her that kind of just said no to competing with Cyborg and letting her have that opportunity after she's just not sure whether she was clean or not in her own mind. So I kind of have to, whatever I really think, I'm like, okay, well, look, they're your values and beliefs, so you're going to run with that. And I respect that. You know, she isn't contrived.
Absolutely.
That's what she's sticking to. But this was an opportunity to go back home to Rotterdam. Rotterdam was a place that was going to be kind to her as well. If she'd have fought in the States, I'm sure she would have got booed during her walkout and throughout her performance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because it's been quite a polarizing time in the media for her and amongst the fans. So then it's a bit of a warmer call going back to Rotterdam. And Marion Renault is a great athlete. I think she's been unlucky in her career to have such close fights and contentious decisions. She's a real veteran. I don't know why she spends so much time trying to strike with people when she's got such a brilliant ground game. It's not that her striking is not good, because I think it's very, very good. But her ground game is just excellent. And I don't think we've really seen as much of it as we could have. So that was going to be interesting. But sadly, you know, I think it's a hand issue that Jermaine has suffered. Yeah. It was what she was speaking about before the fight, saying that she needed surgery on it, but she was going to wait until after this. But she can't even close her hand if you have a look on her Instagram and see the post that she's put up. So, yeah, it sucks. It sucks whenever a co-main event falls out. She is a local fighter. She had an opportunity to sort of, not that I think she's really looking to redeem herself, but in the eyes of certain fans, let's all be honest here, she puts in a spectacular performance, a gutsy performance, a great war. Then a lot of fans are going to be like, okay, there is a great deal of value having Jermaine Durandamy in the UFC competing in this division. It's good to see her back doing what she does.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of things that you said there about Durandamy. When she was on the MMA Fortnite, as we like to call it on this show, with Ariel Helwani, you know, you could tell that what she was saying was genuine and that, you know, she did actually believe what she was saying. And as you said, that she has principles and she was following them. And I'm not one of these MMA fans that kind of tries to jump on somebody and bury them right away, try to give everybody, you know, their due respect as I would expect them to give to me. So very unfortunate this falls out. I thought, like you said, you framed the story very well to see her come back and to see if she could get back into on the good side of the MMA fans. I thought that would have been very, very good for her, but unfortunately we're not going to see her fight. Do we know if we're going to be able to get a replacement on such short notice at all, John?
Well, I can only go by what Renault has put out, and I think she said something to the effect that the show will go on. I don't know if that means she's going to still be in the Netherlands or she's right. been offered another fight soon. But I'm hoping that she's still going to make it out to Rotterdam. But yes, there's certainly been no official line that I've seen where they found an opponent or who, if they have, who that is.
Unfortunate. I guess they'll probably bump up something from the prelims to fill that position. Okay, let's transfer over to the main event if we can. Another interesting story here. Another local guy, and Stefan Struve fighting Alexander Volkov. I think this is a very interesting fight, John. I mean, we've seen Struve kind of struggle throughout his UFC career, kind of, you know, filling into his body, you know, with, you know, some kind of issues that he has had in the past. Very, very interesting to see what happens here with Stefan Struve. One of my favorite fighters, I'm going to be honest with you. And of course, he's coming up against Alexander Volkov, who is just a killer. So what are your thoughts on this fight here in the main event?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Stefan's. I've met him a few times now. He's a very spirited young man, and a whole lot of potential, which it's just been so very sad and frustrating to watch this giant of a man who has all of these tools and then just not able to get to a point where he can express himself. And I'm glad that he's been able to get back in and put a little bit of a run together. But this is a big fight. This is him coming back. If he can get that third straight win, he's back in business. No disrespect to Bigfoot or Omi Alanchuk. Stefan dealt with those fights as, I guess, how we thought that he would, with the kind of experience that he has. A man that really has grown up before our eyes. I think he's nearing sort of 20 fights in the octagon, which is just mental. So a long storied career, injuries, heart issues, losing his father. There's been so much that's gone on, but he has this opportunity now where it's almost like there's been a clearing. And provided there are no further injuries, of course, it's MMA, they come about out of nowhere, then he can get a decent run together. And, you know, let's see what can happen with recent stuff, with what's happened to Junior Dos Santos. We're looking at guys like Struve, like Ngannou, like Derek Lewis. We're looking at those guys and saying, okay, Cain's absent again. So Miocic is up there. Who is going to be the next one to go and like a fresh challenge? And it's exciting. It's a great opportunity for him. But my God, has he got a tough test ahead?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is, like you said, a very big fight for him. He's coming up against a killer. I mean, if you guys want to see good heavyweight fights, this is definitely one you have to be tuned into, because I think it's going to be fireworks no matter what. So let's move along down the card if we can. And this is the only shadow figure that we have on the main event. Maybe people aren't very, they don't know who Abu Azhdar is. So tell us, why we have to be on the lookout for this fella, because I've been watching some of his highlights and his highlight reel is pretty extensive.
Oh, he was off the card a while ago.
Oh, really?
So, are you talking about the middleweight contest?
Yes, Abu Azhdar versus Bahadurzada.
Yeah, Bahadurzada is still in play. He's now fighting Rob Wilkinson. He's a guy from Australia. Okay. I think he's from Tasmania, actually. He's put together a perfect record on a local scene. I think he used to fight as heavy as heavyweight. And then he spent a lot of his time at light heavyweight. And now you look at him, he's just, if you put the pictures side by side of when he first started out to now, they are like almost like two different human beings. So he's shredded down, and there seems to be a bit of noise about this guy. Great opportunity for him. He's a submission specialist. He works very well from the top position. So look for him to try and shut the fight down against the fence, take it down. And then when he's in mount, he's pretty horrible with his ground and pound, likes to use the elbows and then he'll start looking for limbs as well. So he's an interesting addition to the roster, again from Australia, which is proving that it works that over there. MMA is certainly on the rise. They have a champion now. They've always had a contender in Mark Hunt as well. So we have to take Australasian MMA very, very seriously. So that's a good addition. But Bahadurzada, for those who have been fans of the UFC for a while, would have known about this guy for a little bit now, and he brings violence. You know, the guy is a really interesting character. He was born in Afghanistan. I think he grew up since he was about 15 in the Netherlands. He actually spent this camp in the Netherlands with Alistair Overeem and a few others. Sort of what they do in the Netherlands is they really get together. They go about all of the different top gyms for sparring, etc., etc. I've been there and seen it happen. So I'm not sure, he may have been working with the likes of Gegard Mousasi and people like that. So they're such a small country, they tend to bind together and get around one another. And of course, they have a deep history in martial arts. And then you add to that his experience that he had at Black Zillions and then at Jackson Wink, and you've got a guy that's picked up some very useful tools along his journey. And he believes that Afghanistani people are true fighters. He's been away again for a little while, so he needs this. He needs this. He's at home, so it's a big fight.
My apologies, John, for getting the fight incorrect. I'm going off of the UFC.ca website, and Abu Azatar is still listed there, so my apologies on that one. Let's move over to the curtain jerker, if we can, for the main event. We've got Leon Edwards versus Brian Barberena. This is also going to be, in my opinion, an excellent fight. Perfectly placed on the fight card, I think, because this one definitely could be fireworks.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. It's a great placement. And we'll just have to see where it ends up, though, with Jermaine's not being available. We'll have to see how that all works out. But yeah, it looks good in that spot. Leon Edwards is a man that goes about his business quietly. So he is, as much, he does have really good things to say, but he just doesn't say them a lot. So he's not your Conor McGregor type, but he's also not really your GSP type either. He's sort of unique in that way. So he's fought through some adversity, I think, through his life, and he has stuck with the same team, a team called UTC in Birmingham, which is right in the middle of England. And they had a fantastic facility built a number of years ago now, and a lot of people were just saying, well, it just looks like a nice facility, but we're not sure who's going to be training there. And they started producing some pretty decent fighters, and Leon Edwards is a guy really flying the flag for him. He has a brother who is a star in the making as well, who is signed to the Bama promotion. He's worth checking out. Leon has a lot of good tools, a brilliant striking arsenal. He's proved to us that he can knock people out. I think it was his debut when he fought Seth Brzezinski, and it was like a super quick knockout. So we know that he can do it. He was doing it on his lead up to the UFC. We've also seen him take matters to the ground. He's subbed Tumanov. I found out before that fight, he'd actually put his back out and wasn't able to strike very well, didn't want to pull out of the fight, but knew he then had to switch it up, took the fight to the ground, got the sub. So he's very well-rounded, but he is fighting Brian Barberena, who is the spoiler. You know, he has that kind of style of fighting where he just smothers people. He's super tough. He's technically good as well. It doesn't maybe look quite as polished as what Edwards' work does, but it's super effective. And we've seen him take some big names. So he sees this as a time where he's probably more on equal peggings as far as the betting lines are. So he's earned this position now, and he's going to go out there and try and take away from this and move up into the top 10 ranking. So this fight really could unlock the top 15, top 10 for either of these fighters.
Yeah, very interesting fight. Okay, as I mentioned, we finished with the main card. Let's move on. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Spotlight fight of the night, as I mentioned earlier, fight that's not on the main card that you think that we should keep our eye on.
Oh, Matt, it is so tough. Listen, I'll do this real quick. I'm gonna have to go with my. It's kind of a just about first choice, but it's such a close run-in. So, Mirbek Taisimov, Felipe Silva, is money. That fight is ridiculous. Yeah. So, Taisimov is someone in this side of the planet that everyone was thinking he could be a potential next challenger to the title. And then things have been happening, injuries and other situations. I'm not really sure what's been going on. I get messages from Russian fans asking me what's happening to our guy. I honestly don't get that for anyone else. It's really crazy. He has such a big following. He's such a nice guy as well, but what a fighter. I can't wait to see him back. I want him to put some time together to see how far he can go in his career. It's very frustrating for the fans, and I'm sure it's just ridiculous for him. But this guy, Felipe Silva, and it links to my next sort of caveat, which is Darren Till, Bojan Veličković. Darren Till told me that Felipe Silva is an incredible Muay Thai fighter. He was very, very well known in the part of Brazil that I think he comes from Curitiba, and he's moved over to another part of Brazil, which I'm going to mess up, so I won't even bother trying to say it. Darren told me he thinks he fought Edson Barboza and beat him maybe on two separate occasions in Muay Thai. So this guy is a super skilled Muay Thai specialist, but he's obviously been adding to that repertoire. That's a great fight. And I'm just going to give 30 seconds to Darren Till versus Bojan Veličković. Two fighters there, super confident. Serbian Steel Veličković has a great story of how he has journeyed from Serbia down to Florida, up to Denver, now working with those guys up there and feeling very much at home. He's a handful every day in the gym. He's a growing fighter. Great knockout against Nico Masoke. But Darren Till is a guy that a lot of Brits are pinning hopes on to win gold in the future. He certainly believes it. A Muay Thai master who's adding to his skills all the time. Two fights there at the top of the prelims that are unmissable.
Absolutely. And of course, as I mentioned, we've got some other great fights on them. We've got the return of Nick Hine, Desmond Green fighting on this undercard. It's very, very good undercard. All right, John, thank you very much for your time. I know that you want to get moving and get a nap in before the big fight tonight. as I mentioned earlier, I'm a huge fan, and this has been a pleasure for me. It's great speaking with you, and hopefully we can do it again.
I appreciate you having me on. I've seen the love that you've given me over the years as well, so thank you for that. Enjoy Rotterdam. Enjoy the fight tonight. I'm not going to be going to go to bed. I might even record a little video about McGregor while I'm in this flow. And yeah, have fun. Enjoy the fights.
Yes, you too, sir. I appreciate your time. Thank you again. I hear it's a beautiful day over there in the UK, so enjoy it.
Thank you very much. Thanks again.
Sure, sir. Thank you. All right. Mr. John Gooden, wasn't that fantastic? We appreciate his time. And yes, as he mentioned, look out for the UFC Rotterdam card. We are a week out. Thank God the UFC has returned after its hiatus, after we get this fight out of the way, this Conor McGregor fight out of the way. Hopefully McGregor will return to the promotion, defend his belt. We'll see. Should be interesting tonight. Thank John Gooden very, very much for his time. Again, if you want to check out his website, learn more about John, www.johngooden.co.uk. Whew. Well, also follow him on Twitter, @JohnGoodenUK. Follow along on everything he's doing. Check out The Bloody Vegan on YouTube. As I mentioned, some great videos there. You can see how John trains, prepares for these triathlons. You know, what he likes to do, how he likes to prepare. Very interesting stuff. All right, guys, let's go. I'm going to leave you there. Wednesday, of course, we will have another edition of Smack My Picks Up with the team, DJ Tony, Sam from North Carolina, Marco from Waco, and yours truly coming at you on Wednesday. I don't think we're going to have a recap show for the Conor McGregor fight. We might have a show tomorrow. You never know. We have not discussed it yet, but you can rely on the fact that we will have Smack My Picks Up coming at you Wednesday for UFC Rotterdam. As I mentioned, guys, it doesn't seem very exciting on paper, or not on paper. If you're looking at it, it looks very exciting. But let me tell you, there were a lot of great fights on this card. It's an early one for us over here in North America. It says here on UFC.ca. The prelims are starting at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific time. So might be an early one. Might want to set the DVR. But, of course, we're going to have Mr. Gooden and Mr. Hardy on the call. As you know, I always enjoy them. All right, guys, thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. We're back. We did take advantage of the hiatus of the UFC, but we are back now, and it feels good to be back talking some MMA with you guys. So I hope you enjoyed Mr. Gooden. And just like that,
hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.